Transmitting from South Central Texas since 2007, this is Anomaly with Jen and Angela, talking about your favorite sci-fi fantasy topics. We're the halfway point between Muggle and Geek. Now releasing weekly. Subscribe for free and never miss an episode. Go to anomalypodcast.com and click on subscribe at the top of the page. Or find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, or wherever you find your favorite shows.
Anomaly. Something that deviates from what is standard, normal, or expected. An oddity, peculiarity, irregularity, inconsistency, incongruity, a rarity.
Hello and welcome to the Anomaly Podcast. I'm Jen. R2 keeps Audrey Hepburn company on my desk at my home office, and I am an anomaly.
My name is Angela. And I think sometimes I might not be an anomaly, and I am an anomaly. Everyone's kind of falling asleep around here, so I've got the Delilah voice going. I apologize.
Smooth jazz.
Smooth jazz. I think we could announce smooth jazz, Jen. Or like the Christmas station.
We could totally pull off the delicious dish segments for any sort of.
I'm actually always surprised when you bring that up because it's so dirty. Like it's so naughty and you're not naughty at all.
That's all my trademark. Saturday Night Live was kind of that way. You can't avoid it.
All right. So I'm excited.
Well, first of all, we're going to sound a spoiler alert. Spoiler alert for Discovery Season 2, Episode 1, 2, 3, and 4. You've been warned. And that's what we're talking about today.
Woohoo! Yes. I'm super excited. Are we going to play Television Junkie?
We are. Hit it!
I'm a television junkie, and the real world stumps me. I got a lot of problems. Why don't somebody solve them?
Jim wrote that song.
Brother, Season 2, Episode 1, air date January 17th, 2019. After answering a distress signal from the USS Enterprise, the USS Discovery welcomes aboard Captain Christopher Pike, played by Anson Mount, and begins a new mission to investigate the meaning behind seven mysterious red signals. Michael Burnham grapples with her past growing up on Vulcan with her foster parents and brother Spock. And Season 2, Episode 1 addresses many of the complaints fans made about Season 1 by circling back to Trek's original mission to seek out new life and new civilizations.
Yes. First season was not completely annoying, but there were some annoying things. So what did you think of Christopher Pike?
He kind of brings a new, like a fresh vibe to the show. Mm-hmm. And right off the bat, Discovery feels more hopeful, open, mm-hmm. and positive with him in the captain's chair. From that point where he says, I'm not him, I'm not Lorca.
Oh, okay. He's telling everyone that.
Yeah.
No,
but he's
really, also
he's
telling
talking
us.
To us. He's talking yeah. to us. This is going to be different, people. Relax.
Everybody just chill out. Everything's
going to
be fine.
Out.
Yeah, and I like how it's not only about him getting to know them, but us as well, and that they've really gotten to be like a bigger part, even in these first three episodes. Some of the other crew members, you really are starting to kind of get to know them, and they're interacting a lot more, so I think that's super cool.
Stamets, his heartbreak is heartbreaking.
Ugh.
And I hope they don't leave him in that state. They need
he's
to, like...
He's coming around.
And I hope that at some point he's comforted by the fact that maybe, like, Hugh is living on... But I'm not sure where they're going with that.
Yeah, let's talk about this when we talk about episode 3.
Well, anyway. That conversation that he had with Tilly was really touching, where she says, I understand why this place may be haunted to you, but maybe it's good haunted. Maybe living with ghosts and energies that are bigger than you are is why you love science. His response to her is, Tilly, you're incandescent. You're going to become a magnificent captain because you do everything out of love. But I need you to repeat after me. I will say, and she goes, I will say fewer things.
What's funny about that is that like the next day I ran into my friend because I have a friend at work that does watch Star Trek. And she was like, you're Tilly. I am, because there's two reasons. One, because I can't shut up either. And two, because I don't have a poker face. Like,
no.
I don't really even try anymore. Like, sometimes I do. And it takes a lot of energy for me. Everything that I am is always out there for people. That's good, bad, ugly sometimes. But that's who I am, you know? and it's okay.
It's nice to have someone to identify with on the mm-hmm. show.
I mean, there's just so many cool things about her, and the fact that she, because she's in a way the anti-officer, but also the perfect officer. It's such a cool combination of things. And then also in episode one, we meet Tig Notaro's character, the engineer.
Yes, the cantankerous female engineer.
She's amazing, perfectly cast and perfectly written. It's like the perfect example of writing and casting put together into this beautiful poetry. I mean, she's amazing in that part. What is the name? Oh, Jet Reno. What an amazing name. It's the most Star Trek name I've ever heard.
I know,
it's
right?
So great. And she's amazing. So I hope that she comes back. I think she is.
I hope so, too. They have shown us that when we fall in love with a character, they try to keep them.
That's
like Giorgio.
Good.
I mean, she comes back, too. The moments of comedy, I think, were perfect.
Yes, much
Everyone has a punchline in this. And it's well done. It doesn't feel forced. It feels natural. It feels like they're friends, mm-hmm. you know, and they're comfortable with one another. It feels like Star Trek because
yes!
Star Trek has those moments. It's not all
that is what
saving
I said,
the galaxy.
Because I did a review of the first episode with Rico, and it was the weirdest thing. It was supposed to be a big group, but it was me, Rico, and Chris Clemente. I think it was good, though. But anyway, and what we were talking about is that the best thing about this first episode is that it was still beautiful and lots of pretty pictures and, you know, all the modern technology and all that stuff. But then all of the beats at its core, the episode was a Star Trek episode. There was some weird anomaly. They went to investigate it. They sent three members of a crew that are completely outclassed. You know what I mean? Like everything was like note for note. It could have been an episode from TOS.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
And there was even a red shirt.
There was even a red shirt, and it was like the perfect red shirt because he was in a blue shirt.
I was so glad when he died because it was like, someone get rid of this dude bro jock, please.
I did not miss him at all. Not at all.
Well, Tilly rescued everyone, and so does Saru. He gets to rescue people by taking the captain's seat. He has joint custody of Discovery, according to Pike. But Tilly, she maneuvers the dark matter asteroid into the hangar, which was pretty darn cool. And math, people, the power of math.
Hey, math. Yeah, she's pretty good.
And I love the cool little nod they did to the TOS episode, The Cage, that featured Pike. It was the discarded fortune from one of Lorca's fortune cookies that says, not every cage is a prison, not every loss is eternal.
We had to pause that so I could read it.
Yeah, we did too. But not only is it a nod to The Cage, but it seems to be some foreshadowing for the theme of the season, giving us some hints. Because Alex Kurtzman said that this season is going to be an exploration of faith and life after death.
I think that's really awesome. And then we also get introduced to kind of the season anomaly, which is these seven signals and the red angels. And then also we get introduced to a little bit of backstory between Michael and Spock, which I'm still skeptical of the whole thing. It feels forced to me. I'm willing to go on this journey, but it is with a little bit of a nagging.
Yeah, because you don't want them to mess up what we know about our established characters just to shoehorn this series in.
Yes, that is exactly.
I hope they treat it with some respect, you know, and they're careful of what they've already set up. But I want to see more of Amanda because she's always just a little dash here and there in the old series.
Agreed. I like her. I'm very excited about that.
New Eden, Season 2, Episode 2. Air date, January 24th, 2019. A new signal appears, prompting Stamets' emotional return to the mycelial network and leading Burnham, Pike, and Awaseken to a pre-warp planet where they face a complex ethical dilemma. Tilly's over-eagerness lands her in trouble, but when the planet and Discovery's landing party are threatened, her curiosity may be the only thing that can save them.
So this episode was directed by Jonathan Frakes, who we love. And I could tell from the beginning the way the cuts were and the way some of the camera angles were that it was definitely him. Uh-huh. It reminded me of some of the interesting camera work on what's the episode of TNG where they are in the loop and they keep going through the same day over and over again? Do you remember that one?
There were a couple like that.
Well, no, there's the one where they run into Frasier at the end. That's the one I'm talking about.
Where they're coming back from the seminar or whatever in the captain's yacht?
No, I know what you're talking about. That's a pretty good one. And that's called, oh gosh, that's one of my favorite episodes from that season. I think it's season 7 and it's, oh, that's such a good episode too. I feel so bad. I'm such a bad D&G girl.
It's also late.
I know it is. And we're just like, it is, but there's the episode like Changes or Chances or something like that. Anyway, where they're going around, they're stuck in this time loop and they keep repeating the same day over and over.
It's not,
and it ends
me.
In an explosion.
Okay.
And each loop ends in an explosion.
Yes.
And hold on. I'm going to have to look it up because...
Is that the one
Cause
with Tasha Yar?
It's literally one of my favorite episodes. And there's one... No, there's no episodes with Tasha.
Okay.
You're thinking of Yesterday's Enterprise. That's a different one. I love that I knew exactly what you were talking about.
I thought
but
it
yeah,
was.
Cause and Effect is good.
There's a similarly named TOS episode, so I was thinking I was getting the name wrong. But anyway.
Well, and... The reason I thought of it is because since they basically live the same day over and over again, he did a lot of cool camera work to kind of show the different, the show that time is passing, even though it's not passing. And so like, you know, they had this poker game and it played the same every time, but then like there would be like a funky camera angle and some funky ways of looking at it and show how like when you would void something happen, it would happen again. Sometimes things just happen the way they're supposed to happen. Anyway, so like that kind of sensibility is my point. The things that I recognized in this episode, that was a very Jonathan Frakes thing. And then it was cool seeing some of the behind the scenes. Did you see that Marina Sirtis was on set?
I saw the pictures of her with Jonathan Frakes.
Yeah. So that's
somebody
cool.
I saw on the Treks and Sci-Fi Facebook group had said, I forget that they're not married in real life.
I know. Well, I mean, I know, but it's like, it's kind of like Jim and Pam from The Office. I really want them to be married in real life, but it's okay. They seem very happy with their chosen partner. So it's cool. It's cool. Sort of. All that matters is that they're married in the Star Trek universe. That's all that matters to me. They don't even have to approach that, by the way, in the new Picard series. You don't even have to talk about it. Don't talk about it at all. And we'll just all assume
that they're married.
That they're married. And they're living happily ever after with tons of grandchildren. So just leave it alone. Okay, anyway, so this episode, they follow one of the lights, right? Jim and I were talking about this because it's in the Beta Quadrant, correct?
Yeah, it's at the far end of the Beta Quadrant.
Which is not a place anyone ever goes. The only reason they're able to go there is because of the spore drive. They make a huge deal about Voyager being in Gamma Quadrant.
Well, the Gamma Quadrant is the one that's unexplored. I think Beta and Alpha are.
Yeah, but most of Star Trek takes place in the Alpha Quadrant. Okay. I mean, because we're talking about the Milky Way, and it's pretty big.
Please write in and inform us.
No, I'm okay.
Okay, we don't want you to. Never mind.
No, you can write in and inform us. I don't care. But I always got the impression that most of Star Trek, except for Voyager, that's the big deal about Voyagers, that they're so far out there, is my point. So poor Stamets, he like makes a conscious decision. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and stay. And the first thing they make him do is get in the spore drive. Poor guy.
Gosh. He just looks resigned to it. It's like,
yeah.
Okay.
I don't know that he knew what he was getting into when he originally, you know, injected himself. But I don't know that he
didn't
really
want to get back into it because that's where he sees Hugh and he's afraid he won't come back. And he knows he doesn't belong there. He belongs in his universe.
Yeah. Oh, anyway, sorry.
And the interesting thing is that when he comes out, Tilly asks how he's doing. He's like, don't talk to me. Something happened again.
Or it's just that he saw him.
Or maybe he didn't see him.
Or maybe he didn't see him. Yeah. Oh, anyway. But I do like that they're exploring that there's a consequence to this action. Remember when Barclay got functified in his head?
Which time?
Well, the first time. That time
functified.
When he took over the ship and then they traveled and his head, his brain got huge and he like interfaced with the ship.
Oh, yeah, he took over.
And like they kind of joke about it at the end that maybe he had some lasting effects, like because he was able to win a chess game in like one move or something.
Yeah.
But other than that, there's no consequence to that action. Whereas, I don't know, I feel like in this situation, they're really showing a little more of like the psychological effects. So they get there and they find this just random, I love it, an M-class planet.
And I love this because that's such a Star Trek. It just makes me so happy because it's such a Star Trek thing to just be like, oh, here's some humans out in the middle of where we would never have humans.
Oh, so. And the weird thing is just the contrast of seeing like a church on that M-class planet in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
Just
and that's like the main structure.
Stereotypical white steepled wooden structure. Yeah.
Right. And that's the primary structure. So that's obviously been there for a while. And it's, you know, they do the scans and they can see like, oh, that they're from a certain period of time, whatever. But how long does it take them to realize that they're actually from Earth? Or I can't remember exactly.
Well, I think the transmission gave it away, that the one that was on autoplay.
Oh, yeah.
When they scanned the planet and were watching the people on the surface, they weren't under any distress and realized, I think, that it was like a some sort of repetitive message.
Was this
that
the
was
one
playing?
Where he was like, I want my flashing red thing. Where's my flashing red thing?
Who, the scientist? And
no, it was Pike, because they followed the red blink, the blinking red thing.
Okay.
And then he's like, where's my red thing? There's no red thing. So that makes me think that the red things are not really lights. They're being transmitted somehow. And that's just how they're appearing in the sensors, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's something to do with the angel. But anyway, so what else happens in this episode?
They discover that these people were taken from Earth during World War III, 200 years in the past, I guess. They haven't really progressed past that. It's assumed that they were taken to preserve them from the destruction that happened.
Right.
You know, on the planet. So,
well, and these aren't the, it's been several generations. It's not like they stopped.
No, it's their offspring.
Right. So it's not like they stopped growing or aging or anything. They aged out, but then they did not progress past, and it's insinuated, and we're going to talk about this in a later episode, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's insinuated that the religious beliefs are part of that somehow. But what they did was they somehow combined their religious beliefs into
made
one.
A Frankenstein religion.
Started
worshiping the aliens that brought them there.
Right. But everyone seems very devout, and there's not many scientists, or the scientists that are there are not really given, you know, they're not allowed to really research anything, or they're kind of all just stuck. Again, we're going to go into a little more how we feel about that, but it is interesting because this is the first time we hear about something Prime Directive.
The away mission was kind of split on what they should do because they were in disguise pretending to be from another section of the planet, like in another far off area. And one of the scientists there, who really is just basically an engineer who's helping fix things and keep things running on the planet, suspects that they aren't who they say they are.
Right.
And Burnham feels for that individual and wants to take him with them when they leave the planet. But Pike is like, this is a pre-warp society. Prime Directive applies and we can't interfere, even if they are human.
Right.
That was the difficulty that they had in this episode, was not interfering in their culture.
But then also, you know, by meeting the guy who was the scientist who's been sending the message, that also created some conflict because they really did, you know, they really, Burnham especially really did want to help him.
Yeah.
And just help him not feel like, because the thing is it was pre-warp when they left, but not, it wasn't that long after that Cochrane made his flight.
Right.
So it's not like it was, they were so far removed. It wouldn't be weird that there would be some people who would have an inkling that would be the future, you know? So it's not like it's that far removed.
Well, it's not that far from our time either.
Right,
it's like, what, 2056 or something like that. So it's not that far away.
Yeah. Well, and because after the war, it's after the apocalypse and when the warp drive.
Oh, yes.
When first contact happens. Uh-huh. It's not that far off, you know, from our own future and especially not far off from these people's future. So, but it is kind of interesting how on their own, whatever this group of people were, they didn't advance the same way that all of humanity did, even though humanity was not doing very well when that happened. But of course, then they didn't have warp. They didn't meet the Vulcans. You know, there's all that stuff that didn't happen. So I guess I get it.
In my opinion, I think they would have advanced.
Oh, you think they would have advanced?
I think they would have.
Yeah. Well, and like I said before, I think you and I are going to have a deeper discussion about what they were trying to say. And I think I agree with that. But I think that there was something more going on as to what they were. And then I also, and this is kind of, I've had time to kind of think about this. is that I'm wondering if the Red Angel chose a specific group of people that wouldn't advance, like trying to keep some humans pre-warp. Huh?
Maybe.
I don't know.
We'll have to see how the season develops.
The Red Angel's such a huge part of this now that like, what if that's part of it, you know? Right. And what if the humans weren't the only ones, you know? So like, what if there's some Klingons and some Vulcans and, you know?
That would be the way Star Trek has handled things in the past.
Right.
Where they have different little
segments. We talked about this a few days ago, and it's like, maybe it's not as simple as we think it is, like some kind of message about how they feel about religion. Maybe it's more about the story. Maybe it's about protecting these specific humans from a certain thing. I don't know. I'm just making stuff up as I go. Anyway, so they get there, and what's happening on the ship during this time?
I think that Tilly had an accident.
Tilly has an accident because they're trying to figure out, they can't communicate or something's going on. Oh, because of the asteroid field is creating a bunch of radiation. Right. And they basically realize that they're going to, you know, the whole civilization is going to die, in other words. And so they have to kind of do some techno babble. Oh, yeah, this is the donut.
The donut. I love it. That's the best part of the whole thing for me.
It is. And Tilly had the greatest idea. And that is this the one where she was like, math, everybody.
Yes.
Math.
No, wait. That was the episode before when they
that was the one before.
Asteroid.
Well,
the power
it's so
of
cute.
Math, everyone.
The power of math, everyone. She's so cute. Love it. She's awesome. Anyway, so she gets some of the dark matter or whatever it is that the thing is made of. And that starts something that goes into the next episode. But they are able to use some more math and some engineering and all kinds of things to use the asteroid to pull the astronomical anomaly.
Well, the asteroid, the dark matter asteroid, pulls that away from the planet. Like, it's attracted to the dark matter asteroid, and it pulls it out of the system.
And then there's a donut that happens. And it's really cool. Yeah. So, and then they avert catastrophe. And there we go.
And Star Trek.
But it's perfect. That's exactly how Star Trek is supposed to be. But there was just a little more nuance to it now.
Yeah.
And I like that. And I did like the ending where the captain left that energy cell.
Mm-hmm. He gave it to the engineer.
With the engineer. I thought that was kind of cool. Kind of give him a little bump. Mm-hmm.
And he informed them, we are from Earth.
That was
kind of
cool.
We can't take you with us, but here's a parting gift. Mm-hmm. And I would be like, I feel chipped.
Well, yes and no, because it's not like it's really fun in the Federation right now. You know what I mean?
It's not, but it would definitely be more fun than that planet.
Well, how do you know?
I wouldn't want to live there.
How do you know? You don't know.
I know. I know, because when they find the away team in the church, the first thing the engineer says when he walks in and finds them there just standing around the church is, why aren't you working?
Oh, yeah, you're right. It wouldn't be fun. I agree. That's pretty funny. And then, we find more evidence of the angel. They actually have photographic or a video evidence.
Yeah.
That the church was on Earth and they all hid in there. And then the Red Angel saved them. Mm-hmm. Whoever that is. So that's kind of cool.
Whatever. Mothman. Kind of reminds me of Mothman.
Hilarious. So, and then also we get like Tilly's friend at the end of this episode helps her solve this puzzle. And then she realizes that she's not really there.
She's not sure at that point if she's imagining things, just going crazy because she got bumped in the head or what.
That girl appears to her and she just thinks she's it happens so fast. It seems like she's there.
Yeah.
And then she looks up. She's like, you know what? I don't think that person belongs on the ship. And she looks her up, and not only is she not supposed to be on the ship, she's dead.
She's dead. And she never saw her as an adult. Only knew her as a child. So
somehow, weird is going on.
Yeah.
And my initial thought was that it was related to somehow to the Spore network, but I wasn't sure exactly.
Yeah, it is in some way.
So
has
we'll talk
to
about
be.
That in a second. Mm-hmm. All right. So what's next?
Episode 3, Point of Light.
Cool.
We'll do that next.
Is that good enough to
support Anomaly Monthly, and we'll send you a thank you gift. we can use a little help keeping this show coming to you every week. If you can donate $5, $10 or more a month, we'll send you the full version of the original Anomaly theme song. As well as Television Junkie, which we play in the TV segment.
I'm a television junkie.
And Dark Horse, which we play in the outro. Angela's husband, you know, the guy that reads the Anomaly intro, he wrote that stuff, and he plays bass in the tracks. His band, the Illuminati, recorded it back in the early 2000s when we were students at Southwest Texas State University. That's authentic Texas punk, y'all, and it's yours to jam to whenever you want when you become a sponsor of Anomaly. We'll also thank you on the show and add your name to a supporters page on the website. Just go to anomalypodcast.com and click on Donate to select your way to give. Thanks so much for your help. We love you people. Special thanks to Rick P., Rick M., Amber, and Stephanie for their continued support of the show. You know we can't hear you, right? Send your voice memo or email to girlygeeks@gmail.com. Or call our voicemail line at 432-363-4742. Episode 4, and a bell for Charon. A mysterious sphere threatens the USS Discovery, even as May, in her original form, implements a plan that puts Tilly's life in danger. Saru and Burnham's bond grows when Saru is forced to acknowledge a deeply unsettling Kelpian truth. Pike receives new intel on Spock from a loyal friend.
We literally just watched.
I think this one's my favorite.
Really? I don't know. I am glad that they brought Jet back. She's like one of my favorites.
Oh my gosh, that was so funny.
And the back and forth. I like the back and forth between her and Stamets. This is great.
I knew that was going to happen eventually.
Mm-hmm.
It paid off. That little exchange was awesome.
I'm hesitant to say that I liked it. I'm hesitant to say I enjoyed it the most because I'm not a fan of messing with Tilly. I'm like really stressed out about it.
She leave Tilly alone. She turned out okay.
Nuh-uh.
Yeah, she did. Well, the drilling thing was uncomfortable.
She's lost in the network.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Dude.
Yes, I'm sorry. She's lost in the upside down.
That's not okay.
No. We know how these things turn out from watching Stranger Things.
Although, I'm very excited how the Saru thing turned out because, like, I generally thought they were just going to be like, let's Joss Whedon this crap and kill him off. And I was like,
I'm so relieved.
But how cool is it? I did love this part of the storyline because he was also like not a character I care about him, but like, I don't know. There was just something about the character.
He's too uptight.
Yeah. I don't know. Anyway, but I really liked the, this idea that because he was away, now he's away from his world. I love this idea that he now represents the next stage of their life cycle that none of them even know about.
Right, because they've never been allowed to progress past that stage.
How kick-ass is that? Like, that is so... I mean, that just brought that character from meh to amazing. Like,
yeah.
In one episode.
And he has purpose now.
Cool. My gosh. I just love it. But I was like, oh, now we know he's like super smart and he can speak a bunch of languages and now we're going to kill him, you jerks. And I was so mad. But oh, wow, that was a great turnaround. That was amazing. I can't believe how great that was.
That's why it was my favorite because it made me feel so many things. And I think that's a mark of good writing. When you can make me feel stuff rather than annoyance or anger.
And also, how cool is it that they, you know, the original mission, it's not just the original mission of Discovery, it's the original mission of Star Trek, is knowledge and exploration. I love that. I love it.
I know, you're so excited for an episode you were not sure about.
I really wasn't. I'm still upset about Tilly.
She'll be okay. I mean, she's like the star now. I think she's kind of stolen the spotlight.
No, I don't think so.
I think she's like exactly, everyone's favorite.
She's awesome. I don't know. I think Jet Reno's awesome too.
I know. She's inching up there.
She's a dark horse favorite. I really like her. And I'm just really liking everybody now, like everyone.
I was going to say the sphere I thought was super interesting too. I can't wait to figure out what they're going to learn from that. And also the entity that crossed over from the network that was posing as May, what an interesting reason for them to, you know, for it to risk its life to come over. But now it also seems a bit evil.
I don't know that it's evil, but it's like, you remember the episode of TNG where there were those warp sensitive creatures that lived in a certain part of space, and they were basically screwing with everyone's warp drive because warp drive was basically tearing apart reality or something. And so it's like, it's to me, it's similar to that where it's like, you know, nobody was trying to hurt them, but like people will do, you know, all creatures are going to do what they need to do to survive. And I think that's all this creature is doing. Of course, we don't know because it does seem like the tactics do seem a little bit menacing. So we shall see about that. I like it.
Yeah. And just the fact that it does also remind me of the Demogorgons, you know, world, nasty, biological drippiness is kind
of... Yes, a lot of drippiness.
Yes.
I like to get Anthony Rapp singing. That made me very happy.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, I just love him. I'm just like a so fangirl of him in life, you know, like has nothing to do with Star Trek.
Yeah.
I'm just a fangirl of him in life. And it's just amazing to see him doing this. Like that makes me emotional. I know you texted me that you were emotional.
Yes.
Probably not for the same reason.
Well, no, I got goosebumps whenever he asked her to sing her favorite song, Tilly. And she started singing Major Tom. And I the hair on my arms started standing up. I should have known because of the social media posts of them singing it in the car. You know, the actors singing it in that like a car, but seeing it in that scene, that setting in the future, it just kind of, I don't know, it spoke to me in a way like that we're going to get there one day. You know, that's part of our future.
Love, have they split up like the Geordi and the Scotty into these kind of three people who have these amazing
quirks
and abilities with Tilly, Stamets, and Jet Reno. Those three people having that like engineering magic role is so awesome. And I'm just loving how they're doing that. It'll take 8 hours, Captain. You've got three. You know, anyway, it's like, I just love it. I love that they are doing it. This also, like, if this is a real danger in the network, it does kind of give some explanation to why maybe we've never heard of it before.
Exactly.
I mean, so I like if they're going to go that way, that makes sense. And this was so exciting. We totally forgot the beginning of the episode with number one. She looked amazing, by the way.
You're right.
And I mean, she did such a good job with that kind of restrained awesomeness of Majel Barrett, you know.
Yeah.
There is that, because I mean, she's a model and she's beautiful, just like
it's
tall
a hard
and
act
beautiful
to follow
and amazing, and it's like yes, that was great. And I love how she ordered a hamburger with lots
of right
hot sauce. That's awesome.
And he didn't refer to her by name, he just called her number one the whole time.
I love it.
I wonder
for
if we'll
us
find out what her name is. I think in the book series, she had a name, but I don't remember what it is. If you know, write in and tell us.
Please. We know you will. We hope you will.
Yeah. And I love the through line and even the title of the episode, and Abel for
Charon, I think.
Charon. It's the coin they put in the mouth of the dead person that's supposedly crossing the River Styx in Greek mythology.
I love it. Love it.
I mean, obviously they're carrying on with their theme of
they're getting back to
life
their
and
roots.
Death. Yeah.
I mean, so far everything has been getting back to what is good about Star Trek, and that is like, and you can do that without sacrificing effects or action or any of that stuff. You can still have all of the cool things, and you can still be Star Trek. And they're
they're proving that right now. And that is making me very happy. But just don't screw around with Tilly too much, okay?
They won't. They won't. She'll be back in next episode. Because the way things are happening here, they tend to resolve conflict really quickly. Like, they don't leave it hanging for too long.
Good.
So, but anyway. Yeah, that was our thoughts on episode 4.
I'm a television junkie.
Television junkie. That concludes our little 4-part review of Star Trek Discovery's most recent episodes. And if you liked any of them, or if you have anything to add to our conversation, this is your show too. Chime in and let us know what you think. And you can do that by calling our voicemail line at 432-363-4742. Or you can record a memo on your smartphone or iPad and email it to girlygeeks@gmail.com. That's girlygeeks with a Z at gmail.com. You can also write us like an old-fashioned typewritten email, too, if you want. Although we want to hear your voice.
All right.
And I guess we'll be back next week on Valentine's Day.
You'll have to tell me. I want to record something for that.
Oh, okay. You're not going to join us?
I don't know if I can because we have guests tomorrow.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. It's okay. I might try to stop in or I'll try some way to get on, but at the very least, I'll record something for you.
Cool. Well, you've been listening to the Anomaly Podcast. The halfway point between Muggle and Geek. The end.
And Anomaly. Okay.
You're still listening? You are hardcore. If you're new to Anomaly, we're glad you found us. Be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Head over to anomalypodcast.com and click subscribe at the top of the homepage. That's anomalypodcast.com. You'll find all of our episodes on our website, including the ones we've archived. And if you're curious about us hosts, check out our About Us page to learn more. There's a lot of cosplay pictures there, too. We'd love to learn more about you. Tell us how you found us and what part of the world you're listening in. Email a note or send a voice memo recorded on your smart device to girlygeeks@gmail.com. If that's too much to remember, we have a contact field on our website, too. And don't forget, you can always call our voicemail line at 432-363-4742. It may take us a day or two to get back to you, but we never ignore email. Ever. Join our Facebook public group. It's full of friendly anomalies just like you. And Angela and I are usually there posting and commenting as well. Just Google Anomaly Podcast Public Group and boom, you have a link. If you're looking for podcasts like Anomaly, try Treks in Sci-Fi with our friend Rico Dosti. He encouraged us over a decade ago to start our own show, and we've been pals ever since. Angela and I are also guests from time to time on Treks in Sci-Fi. Another show you might want to check out is Waffle On with our friends Meds and Kel. They cover all sorts of movies and TV shows from the US and UK. Then there's the Star Wars Stacks that I host with my friends Chris and Joe. We cover Star Wars books, movies, games, and now we're thinking about doing a role-playing game series. Our characters are going to be scoundrels and bounty hunters. Joe also has a show called The Upper Memory Block. If you love DOS and pre-Windows XP gaming, Joe's show is for you. And if you like audio dramas, there were two series that I played characters in that you might like. Nova Babylonia was a Babylon 5 fan series that Tony Lund created. I played a pain-in-the-butt embedded reporter named Ross Jones in the last two seasons. It's ended now, but it had a great script and it was well-produced. Then there was Star Wars in the Shadow. Dani Pepin wrote and produced that miniseries. I played Guri, the human replicant droid, and Black Sun Assassin. You can Google all these shows or find them on Apple Podcasts. You're still here? You are an overachiever, my friend. Are you Ravenclaw? Virtual fist bump. Oh my gosh, it stopped recording. Oh, it's still recording. You've reached the bonus round, my friend, and you deserve some outtakes. Enjoy.
I sometimes get in conversations, and I've realized this has happened as I've gotten older. I don't know that this would have been the case when we first started, but I kind of want people to know how weird I am now because it's so boring to talk to people who aren't cool. and you know, somebody has a passing interest in Star Wars, and I'm like, oh yeah, I bought my son the Darth Plagueis book. And they're like, who's Darth Plagueis? And I'm like, oh God, I've already revealed myself. Should I cover it up? Should I try to play it cool? Nah, I'm just going to go with it. And I'm like, oh, Star Trek Discovery starting. I got to go, guys. I was not an anomaly yesterday. It was just all muggles and me. The guy who was making the presentation kept dropping these like super nerdy hints, and I never got to talk to him, but he did like some deep Futurama references. And then he did something where he was messing on his computer and it kind of revealed that he had named something Starbuck. You know, he's like trying to fill time because his computer's messing up. And he's like, so has anybody watched the new Battlestar Galactica? I mean, Battlestar Galactica, even the new one, is like 15 years old now. Yeah. And so the best part of this whole thing is that I kind of slowly raised my hand and he wasn't even looking. And then our friend Mark, who's a Star Wars nerd, but he's not really into Battlestar, he just yells, she has, and, like, points back at me. I'm like, oh my gosh.
That's a celebratory.